Well, hello. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Our weekly mission to keep South Florida informed on local, regional, state news and issues affecting us with a panel of the area's top journalists. And this week they are Sergio Bustos. Number one, he is the Miami Herald's political and state editor on laptop watching the final hours of Florida's very exciting 2013 legislative session. Sergio, welcome back.
Thank you.
Glenn Garvin is op-ed columnist and TV critic for the Miami Herald, not watching as intently, but certainly ready to comment. Welcome back, Glenn.
Hi, how are you doing?
And Gina Jordan is also watching from her perch in Tallahassee. She is our reporter there covering the legislature. Ms. Jordan, welcome back.
Thank you, Phil. Glad to be here.
And you are welcome to join in the conversation as we count down the exciting final hours of Florida's legislative session and some things obviously on the table, including that Dolphins bill, which is being talked about, I think, right now or will be soon. So we'll see if we can maybe break some news this hour if something happens. Gina and Sergio are watching. You can also call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. We are tweetable. We have a call sign at WLRN, and we're also on Facebook with our own page there and our website, WLRN.org. There's a live discussion happening at the moment as well. So let's start as we dive right into it here. Time running out for the Miami Dolphins to get state approval for bed tax dollars to help pay for stadium improvements. There's no way to stop the clock, even with an election underway in Miami-Dade County. No more timeouts left, or whatever football analogy you want to go here. The state funding bill was amended last minute in the Senate yesterday, sent back to the House for approval. However, some legislators have said the bill faces an uphill battle there. And Sergio, you've seen this firsthand. Give us the latest on what's going on.
All right. Fresh off the digital press, Phil. Our reporter up there is saying that there was a meeting between the state Senator Oscar Brain and the Senate sponsor of the Dolphins Stadium renovation bill and House Speaker Will Weatherford. And the quote was from State Senator Brain, and it's looking bleak. And he said it twice. So I'll take that as it is looking bleak.
Gina,
still plenty to go.
But Gina's watching, too, and they're supposed to be getting to this. This show could be listened to online later or perhaps on Saturday morning, so it might change. But they're expected to get to this soon. Is that correct, Gina?
Well, I don't know. If they think it's bleak, but it's all up in the air. They still have to get to that big elections bill, too. So right now they're talking about education. So we'll see.
And we're going to get into all the things that they've been talking about, what is done, what isn't done, what's not going to get done. But fitting with our That's So Miami poetry contest that just wrapped up for April, voters were eligible to early vote in an election that may not even count by election day. That's so Miami. Glenn, you've been here for a long time. Have you ever seen anything like this happen?
Well, shortly after I moved here, I think in 1989, there used to be something called the world's tallest Christmas tree up in Lantana. And just after I moved here, the world's largest Christmas tree declared bankruptcy. So I guess in a region where a Christmas tree can go bankrupt, almost anything and everything is possible. You know, we barely seem to even be able to count our ballots in elections that do count. So I'm highly amused at the fact that we're voting in one that may not count at all.
And Miami-Dade residents have already begun early voting, or, you know, a handful, in an election that is contingent upon the legislature's approval. It's culminates May 14th. It would increase Miami-Dade's mainland hotel taxes by 1% at Government Center downtown this week. Our reporter Kaloy Henry spoke with some folks about what they thought about this, and Rosemary Session from Miami says she'd almost made her upper mind to vote yes.
I believe that they'll be with it, knowing that it won't be coming out of our pockets, but it'll be building revenue and it'll be building jobs for people in the community.
Nidia Orta of Miami voted early. She said it was important for her to get out and cast her vote against the deal.
I love the Dolphins. I support my Dolphins. I love football. We got burned with the Marlins, so no.
So if the bill passes and the referendum vote is approved, the Dolphins could receive up to $289 million in taxpayer support from an increase in the Miami-Dade hotel tax. And Sergio, I think this is just interesting to note that the legislature must give its approval for this referendum to go on, and that's why we're in this situation.
Yeah, there's also a couple more hurdles. I think people forget that not only does the legislature have to do this, but Governor Scott has to sign it too. And he said he will do a kind of analysis to see if it actually pays off, whether it's a worthy investment. And then the voters, of course, of Miami-Dade, who have a Marlins hangover, I would describe it, is another big hurdle to get through.
So here is, listening in on some of the debate in Tallahassee this week among the state Senate, and here is Republican Rene Garcia of Hialeah. He was one of only four out of 39 that was opposed to the Dolphin Stadium bill in the Senate.
What do I tell the residents of this great state? Those small business owners, hardworking individuals, hardworking men and women, that when they go to a bank and they try to get a loan, they reject them. But yet, today, we're going to vote on a bill that allows millionaires and billionaires to tap in to taxpayer dollars.
And on the other side of the debate was Democrat Eleanor Sobel of Broward County in Hollywood, argued in the majority that the proposed bill was fair.
Now we can say which projects are worthy of tax incentives. Now, we talk about these millionaire companies, billionaire companies, but on the other hand, we are competing with other states that might have the ability to take some of these companies away from sports teams, away from our good state.
And meanwhile, Tallahassee has become the football capital of the world this week, right, Gina? You've seen the commissioner of the NFL. You had Dan Marino walking around. You had the Dolphins owner, Stephen Ross. Some serious lobbying being done by football entities.
Yeah, and then we also had Dan Marino actually sort of had a different version of the conversation that he had with Speaker Weatherford. On the one hand, Marino thought that this looked like a sure thing. On the other hand, Speaker Weatherford said, oh, I didn't say that, and I think this has an uphill battle. So who knows what's really being said behind the scenes.
How do you think, Sergio, this affects other sports teams around the state, this idea? And the Dolphins, as was reported in the paper in the Herald yesterday, Doug Hanks, may be trying to work out a deal that would forego using any state funds at all, possibly, and just to get the permission to raise the hotel tax. But, I mean, how is this being seen? Talk about a little bit how this process is going through right now.
Yeah, there's a couple other projects out there or bills that would consider, for instance, the Jacksonville Jaguars
right.
want a stadium deal too. And then there's the, I think it's the Daytona Speedway, the race folks want their money. You know, everyone, once someone comes in for money or wants money, everyone's going to try to make the same argument. I thought it was kind of humorous that the folks in San Francisco are even chiming in.
Main
licking
competition
their chops
for
because
for Miami, right?
Yes, on May 21st, the NFL's owners will vote on which city would get the Super Bowl 50, the 50th anniversary, and it could go either to Miami or San Francisco. And it looks like they're licking their chops already, describing Florida's problem as a problem of tempestuous Florida politics. Which is a little shot at us.
Like, Glenn, you're a sports fan. I know that much. But is having Super Bowl 50 worth it? This is the big dance here, the big Super Bowl. It's been a part of Miami's tradition. It's being dangled out there. And is it that big a deal?
No, it's not. Every economist that looks at these things say that the economic impact statements that are kicked around by professional sports owners are absurd and nonsensical. They don't bring in this much money. And what I've written again and again and again, the NFL says the Super Bowl is worth $350 million. If that were true, and the NFL really believed it, they would build their own stadium. They would take over some little town in Central Florida the way Disney did with Orlando. They would build a stadium. They would have the Super Bowl there every year. They would control the development and the hotels and the stores and the restaurants. And they would be insanely mega rich instead of just super rich. Why don't they do that? Because it's not true, and they know it's not true.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. It's Glenn Garvin of the Miami Herald. Also with us, Gina Jordan from our WLRN Miami Herald News Tallahassee Bureau, Sergio Bustos, political and state editor. And you as well. We asked for some feedback on this. We have Pedro, who's been on the line from Miami. Hi, Pedro. Welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Hi, good afternoon, Phil. How are you?
Good.
Well, this is, I've thought long and hard about this, and like the lady in there, I'm a diehard Dolphin fan. I love the Dolphins. However, when they say local jobs, the architect, the contractors, the engineers, the suppliers for this stadium, all these people are out-of-towners. They've already been selected, and the fix is in. When the Marlins Stadium was being built, people could not get jobs because all the contracts were already out. As far as local jobs, they hire a few guys, put them to shovel rocks in a corner, take a picture of them for the TV, and there you got the 15-minute soundbite of the local jobs being used.
Well, I'd say one thing about what you're saying is that this is a tax that would be paid for Miami-Dade, so shouldn't the jobs go to people in Miami-Dade County? And that's not reality, right? There's no way you can just restrict jobs to – I mean, you could have a pool of people, but you can't do that, right, Serge?
Yeah, and obviously anyone can come – someone who's looking for a job up in New York can wander down to Florida and get a job as
right,
well.
It seems inherently
big
unfair.
Contract numbers, the big contract amounts will go to out-of-town firms. And one more thing, is the Broward County bet taxes available for
no,
this only?
You're not allowed to use them for purposes of – the stadium is technically in Miami-Dade County, so it cannot be used for Broward.
Well, that's pretty interesting because then a lot of teams and people are going to stay in Broward County. So
right,
they're going to reap the benefits.
Right, there's no reason for anybody in Broward County to oppose this because it's not going to come
of course
out of their pocket.
Right.
Hey, Pedro, thanks very much for your call. I think you made some very, very good points there. And one thing before, there was actually a PolitiFact done, speaking of the mayor of Miami-Dade County just recently, on Carlos Jimenez, who's become a very interesting figure here. He got elected as mayor on the platform of the Marlins deal. It was a bad deal. And now has been the most fervent supporter of the Miami Dolphins in their pledge to try to get this this hotel bed tax increase. He's been the central figure in all this, Glenn.
Florida, what can you say? Yeah, you know, here's Rick Scott, who now is in favor of all these things he used to be against. We have a state of populated exclusively by Charlie Crists, politicians who believe whatever's convenient for them at the moment. There's nobody with any convictions in the entire political apparatus of a state.
All right, so we end this segment on this note. What do the Beastie Boys and the Miami Dolphins have in common, you ask? Well, for the last 3 months, we've heard Dolphins CEO Mike D. Okay, he's been, you know, Mike D., Ad Rock. Glenn, this is ringing a bell to you, honey? Beastie Boys references to you here.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big Beastie Boys
Adam Yauch. Anyway, Mike D is also Mike D. So it's been everywhere on TV, on team's behalf, talking about why the stadium is needed. That got the attention of radio producer Gabe Graben, who decided to remix the news using the Beastie Boys frontman, Mike D.
My name's Mike D, and I'm about to get money.
Come. I'll close just by saying we made a pledge.
Money, come.
We made a pledge that we would
get that Super Bowl. Money, come up. Get that Super Bowl.
All right, so you can go to WLRN.org to see the video that goes with this, done by some very funny and creative people, including Kenny Malone of our staff, Rebecca Monson of University of Miami. It's on WLRN.org. You should check it out. We're going to conclude on that. We do have plenty of other things to get to. We're going to talk about why the Florida legislative session was dominated by an automated voice for a while this week, and also talk about the bills that are coming in on the last day. You're listening to the Florida Roundup. I'm Phil Latzman, back with our panelists in just a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN.
Instructional materials review process, requiring the fee amount to be posted on the school district's website and reported to the department, providing a limit on fees, providing for a stipend, reimbursement for travel expenses.
All right, so let me explain. So when they did the mix down there with the Mike D, we had Mary, the automated reader in the Florida House, and we're on the Beastie Boys theme there, so we figured we'd mix down the Beastie Boys with Mary, the automated text reader. And we'll explain this in just a moment. I don't know if it worked, but, you know, it was a creative attempt at radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Sergio Bustos looking at me very quizzically right now, the Miami Herald state and political editor. Glenn Garvin has got a big smile on his face, like, what are you talking about, pal? He's with the Miami Herald as well. And Gina Jordan is our reporter in Tallahassee, perhaps more of a Beastie Boys fan than the other two on our panel today. But you can join us at the Florida Roundup at gmail.com. We're also tweetable at WLRN. And I know everybody on this panel is very active in the Twitter world as well. Sergio, you want to give yours out?
Harold Bustos.
And easy to remember.
Hashtag Harold Bustos.
Yours, Glenn?
You know, I never tweet myself, but I think I'm at Glenn Garvin.
Yeah, that's you. And Gina, yours?
At Hear Your Thought.
Hear Your Thought. And I'm at Phil Latzman. We also have a live blog going on our website at WLRN.org. So what was that disjointed voice you heard mashed up with the Beastie Boys in my failed attempt at entertainment? It was Mary the text reader, the new star of the Florida legislature. Gina this week brought us a fantastic piece on WLRN about how the session was dominated by this voice for a couple of days. Minority Democrats in the state house upset that Republicans are refusing to accept federal money for health care expansion, staged a filibuster, stalling the pace of the session, requiring all bills be read aloud in full. And for that task, Republican leaders in the House dusted off Mary, the automated text reader, to speed things up. Here's the usual House Speaker, Will Weatherford.
Members, we have an auto reader. We had it in the closet just in case we ever had to actually read the bills. So it may be a little bit fast. Everybody remember the Micro Machine commercials? Maybe a little bit faster than normal, but you should be able to hear the bill, and it will be read in full according to the Constitution.
All right, so here's what he's talking about, a little bit more of the voice that dominated the state house for a couple of days.
Section 2. Subsection 2 of Section 627.9407, Florida Statutes, is amended to read 627.9407, Disclosure, Advertising, and Performance Standards for Long-Term Care Insurance. To advertising. The Commission shall adopt rules establishing standards for the advertising, marketing, and sale of long-term care insurance policies in order to protect applicants from unfair or deceptive sales or enrollment practices.
That's probably too much, actually. Imagine listening to that all day for two straight days. House Democrats pulling this stunt. Gina, you reported on this week. What was it like to have to sit through that?
Oh, yes, Mary. Mary was not very entertaining, and she was hard to understand some of the time. But this was the only thing that Democrats really could do to protest what was happening with health care.
So was it worth it? And we should note that it's over now because they could only do it for, I guess there was a limit to how much time they could do it, or there was a limit up to the time they could do it. But so it's over. They can't do it anymore. But was the move worth it for them?
That I don't know. Some of the bills, because of how long it took to read these bills in full, there were some bills that got postponed and will not be taken up again. Nothing substantial, I don't think, but still at this point, we're delayed on the Dolphins, we're delayed on the elections bill. So whether it was worth it, I don't know. They certainly were able to get their point across. The only problem is Mary took center stage. So if Mary hadn't have been so interesting, maybe the fact that they were protesting this rejection of $50 billion in federal funds, maybe that would have gotten a little bit more publicity.
Sergio, we've seen some bizarre things. This actually happened a few years back, I think, when Marco Rubio was Speaker of the Florida House. But it's sort of interesting to see Democrats in Florida taking a tactic from Republicans in the U.S. Senate when it comes to filibuster tactics.
Yeah, it's democracy as fast as you can get it. You know, I guess it's one way to look at it. I agree with Gina. Well, in terms of what Gina says, I don't think it really did much other than draw attention to Mary. The larger issue of Medicaid expansion and healthcare expansion was a much more thornier issue that really overshadowed the whole session. And in the end, the legislators couldn't agree on a plan, so there's not going to be any plan really on Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, and that is the big issue we're setting up here, is that they were there doing this over healthcare expansion. It's not going to get done this session. Is that what we're hearing? And if it doesn't get done this session, we have, I guess, till next year to get this implemented. Do they call a special session to figure this out, or what happens next?
Yeah, right now, Governor Scott doesn't look like he's leaning toward calling any special session for it. He hasn't been very forceful, if you will, in pushing it, although he had changed his mind at the beginning of the session. He had been opposed to getting any federal dollars to expand Medicaid, and he changed that tune at the beginning and was urging lawmakers to do so. The Senate was willing to do it. The House was not. And in the end, they just couldn't find a way to find a compromise. So it's going to sit there. And I think the idea is let's wait till next year.
Speaking of health care expansion, South Florida Congresswoman, Democratic National Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz visited Tallahassee this week, calling on state leaders to pass before the end of the legislative session a health care bill that would cover 1 million uninsured people. Obviously, that's not going to happen, as Sergio just told us. She is a former state lawmaker, of course, a staunch ally of President Obama's now. And she said that state Republican leaders are ignoring the U.S. Supreme Court and the election last year, and she accused the GOP of acting like children.
Spoiled children who are stomping their feet and insisting because they didn't get their way that they are not going to let anyone benefit from the outcome. And it's irresponsible.
Glenn Garvin, what's the view, the libertarian view, if you will, on this?
Well, first, I'd just like to ask a question that has been troubling me. Am I the only one who is wondering what the illegitimate offspring of Hal, the computer in 2001, and Mary, the bill reader, would sound like?
Oh, you mean Hal? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you should have come with me this morning before I did that dud right there. It might have been a little bit better.
I think, number one, Debbie Wasserman is. I don't understand this. It's true that the Republicans lost the presidential election. They didn't lose the legislative elections in Florida. They're elected representatives. They have the right to represent the platform they ran on. I personally think they're very smart to question what happens when you create these entitlements. This is like a. This is like the old image of the drug pusher. Oh, here, kid, you get the first shot for free. What happens? We get all this federal money, and then what happens 2, 3, 4 years down the road if it gets cut off? Trying to retract an entitlement in today's society is practically impossible. You're stuck with it forever once it's created. Last year, I believe it was, Congress... Under the formula for Social Security recipients, they weren't going to get a cost of living adjustment, as they had every year since time immemorial, because the cost of living didn't go up. Interest rates have been low. Mm-hmm. We haven't had inflation. They passed it anyway because a cost of living adjustment is now an entitlement. This is the problem with these things.
I know more from Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She also said that the Governor Scott must take a stronger stand on getting health care in Florida enacted.
Oh, it's very nice that Governor Scott has had a deathbed conversion and decided that he does want to accept the federal funds. You know, it's time for him to get off the sidelines. Either he's for accepting those funds and is willing to use his clout and his weight and put the full weight of his office behind that position, or he's not.
Sergio, what do you think there? What does Governor, is she right? Does Governor Scott have to step in here and be more forceful?
Well, you know, your typical politician would, but you're not talking about your typical politician. You know, Governor Scott was a newcomer. He was a businessman for many years. And we all know the story about running a healthcare company and the hospital chain. But the bottom line is he's been quite unconventional in his ways. I guess they're a mystery to a lot of political observers, but this is his way. Even when you ask him when the House and Senate approve something, whether he's going to sign it or not, he always typically says the same thing. He'll review it. He hasn't had a chance to. Meanwhile, typically the story or the bill has been written about ad nauseum. We're just looking for an opinion. And so he's very unconventional in that way. As for Debbie Wasserman Schultz's comment, well, I was just counting. There's about 15 states that are irresponsible in her eyes. And there is a lot of back and forth on it. There are states that are taking it. But remember, the Supreme Court was the one that decided Medicare expansion should be an option for states, not a mandate. So there's a lot of differences of opinion on it.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. That's Sergio Bustos, who is the Miami Herald's political and state editors. We're watching the final day of the Florida legislative session. Glenn Garvin with the Miami Herald is a television critic and the op-ed columnist, and Gina Jordan is our correspondent in Tallahassee, covering the session so well for us and everything else that comes out of the state capitol. So I guess the question, Gina, as we we get down to the nitty-gritty here on this last day, what will get done and what won't as far as some of the things that are coming through the pike on the last day?
There really isn't a whole lot left. There are a lot of bills that we don't know a whole lot about that may not go through. But really what we have left that we've all been talking about would be the fix to health care, the elections bill, and the Dolphins. And those are really the things that are left other than the budget.
What's up with the elections bill, by the way? There's the last minute stumbling block there with the elections bill.
Well, just like the elections, Phil, it's Miami-Dade. There's a bill that would punish, there's a provision in the bill that would punish any elected election supervisor. Mm-hmm. And there's only really one in the whole state, and that's Miami-Dade. And I don't have to retell the story of what happened last year with long lines of voters. So, mm-hmm. But there's a sticking point there. They may overcome it today, but it's up in the air. But what's sad about this bill is that everyone was in agreement early on that we need to fix the problem with long voting lines, the long ballots, and all that. And here we are on Friday, the last day, and it still hasn't been resolved.
Not settled. We did know, by the way, next Friday we'll have a special program. We're going to do a town hall follow-up and asking everyone who participated in our town hall event in February to weigh in on whether Tallahassee got the important stuff right from our perspective. So that's next Friday. We'll do a lot more state stuff. But there was a couple other things that happened this week that were kind of shocking. The one veto that shocked everyone, Gina, was Rick Scott. We talked about his sort of not being his role or non-role in this, but he did veto an alimony bill this week. It was perhaps one of the most bitterly contested things, the most attention of any bill. We heard from a lot of people, a huge lobbying effort on this bill. The legislature passed it. The governor vetoed it. What happens now, Gina?
Well, one of the sponsors, Representative Workman, is trying to get part of that bill tacked on to another bill in hopes that both chambers will pass it today. I don't think that's likely, but ultimately the governor said he vetoed that bill because he didn't like the fact that you could go back and open previous cases and you could do some things retroactively. That was specifically why he didn't like it. And Representative Workman says, okay, well, let's take that part out and try this again. He's really trying to push this through, but I don't see how it's going to have a chance today.
And he goes to search here. You're talking about Governor Scott's popularity, and this certainly won't help him with the huge lobbying effort that was put forth for those who wanted to change Florida's permanent alimony system.
Yeah, on the other hand, it's going to help him, I think, with women. That was one maybe political calculation he made.
A lot of second wives were for this, too. It was a whole –
right, the whole
sides of it.
And it was
yeah.
– you know, it's interesting. It's one of those stories that we typically didn't cover as much in the past. This year we paid more attention to it, and it was really a hot-button issue this year. Let me mention one other bill that's going to be important for Miami-Dade here. The House is expected to pass a bill that would enable Miami-Dade County to levy a voter-approved half-penny sales tax to support building and maintenance projects at Miami-Dade College. FIU could also benefit. That bill is hanging in the balance today.
So that's a half-penny.
Half-penny.
Half-penny on top of your sales tax that you pay now.
Correct.
It's kind of flown a little bit under the radar now.
Yeah, it's it should be decided today.
Interesting. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. And as far as ethics and campaign finance reform, there was a wide-ranging ethics bill now signed into law after it unanimously passed both chambers of the Florida legislature last week. The governor signed it into law. The Florida Commission on Ethics now has more authority to collect fines. Lawmakers would be banned from lobbying state agencies for 2 years after leaving office. It also requires them to abstain on any bills that could directly affect their personal finances and prohibits lawmakers from accepting government jobs while in office. Now, I spoke with Dan Krausner, who is the executive director of Integrity Florida, who had a lot to do with putting together and helping out with our town hall in February. It's a nonpartisan research institute and government watchdog whose mission is to promote integrity in government and expose public corruption. And Dan says it is progress.
The fact that Floridians are raising concerns about public corruption, we wanted ethics reform. It was an issue in the campaigns around the state. and our lawmakers delivered, it's a positive sign. This is the most comprehensive reform we've seen in more than three decades.
Glenn, you know, you think that this bill does enough? I mean, from what you've seen?
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, and I have a cough button right here that I could have used to fail to follow instructions. This is why I'm not in radio, I guess. corruption is so profound and so deep-seated in Florida and a lot of other states, but I live here, that I don't think there's...
Is it worse here, though?
I often think so, frankly. You know, this has been largely forgotten because we have so many corruption scandals. But at one point, I believe we had an education superintendent in Dade County who was putting gold-plated plumbing in his house with taxpayer money. Anybody remember that? I mean, that's even by the standards of...
not in the current administration.
No, not in the current administration. Somebody knows, right? Even by the standards of corruption in great places like Chicago, gold-plated plumbing is pretty profound. So I'm kind of skeptical.
It's in our tradition. It's in our blood. Yes. It's in our background. Is that what you're saying?
And the real problem is we keep... I mean, we can pass laws, and this law may help some, and, you know, good for the guys who passed it. But the real problem is voters keep electing this kind of people to office. And the real problem with public ethics is not going to be addressed until we look in the mirror and say, why do we vote people? And the reason is we vote people who promise us stuff using other people's money. And there you go.
All right, Sergio?
Yeah, in a nutshell, the one the campaign finance bill, the curious thing about it is they eliminated what are called, and this is a true name, as I say, I'm not making this up, the Committees of Continuous Existence. Mm-hmm. These are committees that were allowed to bring in money, unlimited amounts, and spend it in kind of under the radar. They could spend it on certain things that we didn't really, it was hard to track that money. They've eliminated those to their credit, but they've created new political action committees that can still rein in unlimited contributions. And now the reform here is that we will be able to track and monitor that money a little better. But I think the lost point here in the legislature is, yeah, but you're still bringing in unlimited contributions.
I think that's interesting, though. Those committees, though they're treated as a – we've been treating this as breaking news. Actually, these things have been around for, what, 30, 40, 50 years?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever raised a fuss about it.
Well, that's Glenn Garvin. He's with the Miami Herald. Also with us from the Herald is the paper's political and state editor Sergio Bustos, and WLRN's Gina Jordan is joining us from Tallahassee. Last day of the session. And some other major education news this week for those that were following the parent trigger legislation. Gina's been doing that along with some other education stuff we'll talk about with her when we get back. And then we'll turn the conversation over to the big trial that will take place this summer in Sanford involving, of course, the slain Miami teen Trayvon Martin. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. Thanks for listening. We're back in a moment. And welcome back on a busy Friday here. It's the Florida Roundup, Saturday morning if you're listening to it, or anytime, of course, on our website, WLRN.org. Lots of stuff, though, going on in Tallahassee, so we continue the discussion there. And we're with Sergio Bustos, Glenn Garvin, and Gina Jordan. We want to remind you, we let the door open for some air every once in a while. I'd love to hear from you guys at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. We're also emailable at thefloridaroundup@gmail.com. We're tweetable at WLRN. We have our Facebook page, and we'd love to have you a part of that as well as our producer, Elaine Chen. There's a lot to cultivate activity there. Let's go to the phones, and Derek has been waiting in Miami. Derek, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Well, good afternoon. I just had a quick question. You guys were going through the whole Medicaid expansion that was under debate in the Florida legislature over the past week. And I believe I heard someone describe Medicaid as an entitlement program, and I wanted to get a better understanding of what the panelists meant with calling Medicaid an entitlement program. I mean, one has to be poor to receive Medicaid, so is the thought that people are making themselves poor so they can avail themselves of the bounty that is Medicaid? I mean, there are nearly 6 million Floridians who do not have health insurance. And so So if the panelist is against using Medicaid to provide health insurance for the poorest of our fellow citizens, then what is the approach that the panelist would prefer?
Glenn, fair question. How do you insure all these people, or do you just not?
That's a separate question. I'd like to speak to the part. Yeah, it's an entitlement program. Sure, it is. Social Security is an entitlement program too. Does that mean people get older on purpose so they can qualify for it? No.
People
get older because they live a long time. An entitlement program is something, is a benefit that you become statutorily entitled to. And whether you believe in the cause or not, once it's there, it's almost impossible to get it off the books. Pressure groups assemble alongside these things. So what I'm saying is, if the legislature to say just because this program is free right now doesn't mean it will be free in 4 years, 5 years, 10 years. And if it's not free, how will we pay for it? That is prudent statesmanship.
Okay, hey, Derek. Well, Social Security is a separate conversation. The legislator was talking about Medicaid this week. The law itself explicitly says that the federal government will pay 100% of the coverage for the first 3 years, and then it does a sliding scale down to 90% going forward. I think it's by 2020 it reaches 90%. So between 100% for the first 3 years down to 90% after we
right.
reach 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So if the legislator is going to sit there and say, well, gee, how do we pay for these new Medicaid recipients once we become a member of this program? Well, that's one thing. But to say, oh, we don't see those Floridians who don't have health insurance, we don't want to do anything for them, we're just going to leave them to whatever they're
good
doing
points.
Right now.
Derek, very good points, but I wanted to just ask that question again. I thank you very much for your call. But Glenn, how would you cover those? I mean, do these people, aren't they entitled to being covered?
I think the conversation about medical insurance is much bigger and broader than this small chunk of it. Frankly, I don't think we know how Obamacare will affect any of this.
Right.
We're in uncharted waters right now, and a lot of things have to be hammered out. And I personally would not want anybody in the legislature who says, "Oh well, it's free right now. Let's not worry about how to fund it down the road."
Right.
That's no matter how good a cause it is, you have to think about what you're going to do to pay for it.
And NPR, by the way, started a series this morning on Morning Edition talking about this very thing and how that will be, Sergio, a referendum on Obamacare will be when it kicks in next year and in those midterm elections for both the president and for Congress.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting listening to Glenn and the caller. This is all about ideology and beliefs and where is government role here, what the government role is. What's interesting is that, you know, you say Obamacare, some call it Affordable Care Act.
He calls it Obamacare.
He calls it.
So
the point is, it's a very difficult ideological fight that's going on, and that's what took place in Tallahassee.
He, by the way, meaning the president of the
yes.
United States, who it's named after. Anyway, one more call. Daniel in Miami Beach, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Hi. Daniel, you with us? I guess Daniel's not. So we can move on to some education stuff. And I guess this would kind of be considered a major miscalculation in Tallahassee, where a school bill called the Parent Trigger, Gina, went down to defeat in the Senate this week. What would this bill have done, and why did it fail?
Essentially, it would have said that parents have the right to petition their local school board for changes in a chronically failing school, a school that has received an F at least twice. And they could petition for changes that are federally sponsored. So we're talking about charter schools. We're talking about maybe firing the whole staff and starting over, maybe bringing in some additional training for the staff. The problem is, toward the end, this still came as a bit of a surprise, but toward the end, it became clear that some of these groups that were in favor of the parent trigger, they had put out a petition, and the Miami Herald helped uncover this. The petition was faulty. The sponsors of the bill were using this petition to say, look at all these people who want this, yet the Herald found that Some of these people said they did not sign that petition. Others were on there twice, and it was really questionable. So even though Senate President Don Gates at the very beginning of session said, we have the votes this year, we have a new makeup in the Senate, we have the votes, this thing is going to pass, he did not count on certain people changing their votes, like Senator Miguel Diaz de la Portilla of Miami, for example. He's one of the Republicans who changed his vote. So again, it did come as a surprise, but it was a 20-20 tie, and so it failed.
Yeah, 20-20 tie for a second straight year. It was a big year in education policy. Of course, the Common Core standards are kicking in. They changed the graduation requirements, which we talked about on the show last week. But one thing that was not settled and was a priority of Governor Scott's was the teacher raises. And that did get settled this week, although maybe not exactly the way Governor Scott wanted it to get settled. Give us the latest on that.
Well, the teachers will get their raises, and the $480 million that was set aside for these raises is now in the budget. The issue that came up is it won't just be teachers. It'll also be school personnel. And the way those raises are doled out will be in part due to how well the teachers do on their evaluations. So the big sticking point with this initial bill was that the teachers wouldn't get those raises until June of 2014. So that has been changed. They've worked that out in a conforming bill. Essentially, they've said the districts have to come up with an evaluation system to decide how much each teacher will get. The ones that are highly effective will get a $3,500 raise. If you're just merely effective, you'll get $2,500. And as long as the districts put those evaluations in place, they can start doling out those raises sooner than June of 2014.
And Sergio, you've been looking at this as well. What do you see?
Yeah, the headline out of the legislature on education is real simple. It was a big winner in the state budget. Now, when Scott first came in, though, it was a big loser. He cut a huge amount of money, I think it was $1 billion or more, from education, and that got people clamoring. Scott has made a political calculation again as he weighs this run for re-election in 2014 that he needs to reach out and make education one of his signature issues. And to do this, he's done exactly that. He's trying to get more money into education. He did a tour, a listening tour of schools, I think last year. So this is part of that political calculation moving into 2014.
And the reason they're able to do this is because they actually have a surplus in the budget this year, which I guess comes out to $74.5 billion. But
not the surplus.
The budget itself, right. The surplus is quite different. But, Glenn, I guess, looking at it in the past, when you didn't have this, you had to cut. But a lot of people would say, well, just take that surplus and put it away for a rainy day.
Or give it back. How come that is never presented as an option?
True,
let's give it back to the people we took it away from.
Anyway, you're listening to the Florida Roundup here on WLR. And one other thing about the legislature before we sign off on that topic, at least for today, the texting while driving legislation is a very another issue that's gotten quite a bit of attention, of course, in our listeners, the Miami Herald. What's the latest there with the texting while driving ban, Sergio?
The way I understand it, and Gina can help figure this out because it's a little confusing, but basically if you grab your smartphone while you're driving along the Palmetto Expressway or the Turnpike or any highway, if the cops spots you speeding and you're texting and driving,
right,
then
it's a
secondary offense and you can be charged. But there is some language, and I just want to clarify, maybe Gina knows for sure, but they cannot use your cell phone records unless you've been in an accident that causes death or some major kind of bodily harm to someone. I think that's the way it's
That's
written.
Correct.
Gina, right. To clarify that, because that was the poison pill, if you will, that was nearly thrown in at the last minute that threw this off track, right?
Yeah, Senator Nancy Dietert was the sponsor of this bill. She did not like this amendment, but she went with it because she figured something is better than nothing. But the bottom line is, if you want to contest the fact that you have been given this ticket for texting or emailing or whatever while driving, the police or the prosecutors, they can't pull up your cell phone records. It's really a very watered-down bill. It's a secondary offense. There's just really not a whole lot to it. You can simply say, like Nancy Dietert said, you can tell your teenagers, don't text and drive, it's illegal. But that's really kind of as far as it goes.
And I guess the issue is, the question of the week, will the governor sign it? That's still up in the air.
I'm sure he's reviewing it.
Exactly.
Now, I'd like to ask Gina a question while I have the chance here. I don't understand why this has been such an uphill battle on this thing. Is there some big texting while driving lobby that that we don't know about it, that we don't know about that is subverting this bill? I don't get it. What's the problem?
Well, you know, that's entirely possible. But one of the things that this Republican-controlled legislature has said about this bill is that they're really unhappy about any infringement upon civil liberties. And that's one of the reasons this amendment was put in, saying that the police can't go through your cell phone records. They are very concerned about privacy rights and civil liberties. And that's really what it comes down to. That's why it took so much just to get this bill passed.
I think that's because many of them don't live in South Florida. Sergio, want to put a cap on this?
Yeah, Gina put it right. It's been going on for 7 years. It's an ideological argument about your rights and your freedom in America. Not to you should be able to text and drive, and the government shouldn't be involved in that.
All right. Now, I wanted to just sort of end with this because we were at the AP Awards banquet last week, and we won a bunch of awards, WLRN. Anyway, so we were there, and before this all started, we heard from the two lawyers in the upcoming murder trial of Trayvon Martin, the Miami Gardens teen, of course, gunned down last year in Sanford. And it just kind of reminded us that while it probably won't be an everyday circus on public radio, it certainly will be on the major news networks this summer, and it could make for what could be a pretty long, hot summer here in South Florida. In fact, Mark O'Mara, one of the defense attorneys, said he thinks it's going to split the country. And, you know, I said, well, why are you taking a case like this if you think it's going to split the country? But it sounded kind of dire. So I just figured, you know, looming here, this high-profile case. Now, Zimmerman this week, George Zimmerman, we all know him, waived his right to a pretrial immunity hearing under the state Stand Your Ground law this week, speaking for himself during the court hearing in Sanford.
Is it your decision not to have a pretrial immunity hearing?
After a consultation with my counsel, yes, Your Honor.
Afterward, his attorney, Mark O'Mara, told reporters his client's preference for a jury decision made a pretrial immunity hearing irrelevant, but that he has not ruled out bringing up Stand Your Ground at the upcoming trial.
With the strategy of how to handle this case with a man who wants to go before a jury, it makes perfect sense to me to not assert that pretrial.
The attorneys for the Martin family say it vindicates protesters who rallied for his arrest in the weeks after his death, and Zimmerman faces second-degree murder charges. Glenn, this is looming right in the background here in a couple of months.
I think the attention to this is sort of not warranted. This was strictly a tactical decision. It's almost inconceivable to me that a judge would dismiss this case, a case this scrutinized with so much public attention riveted on it. I can't imagine that a judge would dismiss the case before a jury could hear it. And I'm sure that's what Zimmerman's attorneys calculated as well. So they would have been incurring a setback. It would have looked bad to potential jurors. And there was little potential upside. I don't think this really tells us anything about how the trial is going to go.
Do you think this is going to split the country and we're going to have a big circus here as a television critic?
Oh, I think, you know, race, anything involving race is such a hot button. And people on both sides quickly become wildly irrational. You saw it on the Duke Lacrosse case. You saw it on Tawana Brawley way back when. Mm. I think you'll see it on this. And that's, I'm not saying O.J. Simpson. I'm not saying this is fake by any means. I'm saying that when you mix race and crime together, Americans go nuts. And I'm afraid that is what we're in for again.
All right. Well, there's the warning. Glenn Garvin is with the Miami Herald. Sergio Bustos, also with the Herald, the paper's state and political editor. And Gina Jordan, any final words there from Tallahassee? Anything happening?
Well, the House is back in session and after a recess, and we can only hope they finish their business early.
You can only
early
hope.
Today, please.
All the, Sergio, too. He's got to edit all those stories. Thanks, all of you guys. I wanted to close out. We had our That's So Miami poetry contest this week, and thanks to everyone who sent their poetry in. You may have heard on WLRN for our contest. You can see the winners at our Tumblr page, thatsomiami.tumblr.com. And in conclusion, here is my ode to sports in our town. The Heat's a treat, the Dolphins are meek, the Panthers are toothless, and the Marlins are clueless. The sports fans come, the sports fans go, better produce a winner, or else they won't show. That's so Miami. And that does it for the Florida Roundup this Friday, May 3rd, 2013. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen to it again on these airwaves tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. And, of course, you can go to MiamiHerald.com or our website, WLRN.org, to find out the latest on what happened with the session. We also post the show on our website every week. Florida Roundup is produced by Elaine Chen and Alicia Zuckerman. Our Public Insight Network analyst, Steph Farrow. Our social media editor is Danny Rivera. For WLRN, our executive producer, Peter J. Meritz. For WLRN Miami Herald News, Dan Gretsch. Our technical supervisor, Paul Fingers Leary. Thank you, Paul. South Florida Arts Beat is next. Only a game if it's Saturday morning. Until next week, I'm Phil Latzman. Thanks for listening. Stay informed, South Florida.